Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations. Ante Up, it's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's January 15th, 2021. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm the Grim Reaper, Scott Long.
I know. What is going on this week?
You know, have you seen the meme that said, "Welcome to December 47th, 2020?
No, I haven't seen that, but that's good.
Because it just doesn't seem like 2020 is ever going to end, right? all the news this week is death.
It's jeez, jeez.
I'd like to have some there's some happy stuff in here, too, but we're going to start the show off
with
death and death and death.
Yeah.
That never makes me happy, so... But Sheldon Adelson, the chairman and CEO of Las Vegas Sands, which owns the Venetian Las Vegas, has died at age 87. Adelson, known for successfully growing the Venetian Las Vegas and Venetian Macau in China into well-known international gaming destinations, also became the bane of online poker players for aggressively advocating for online gaming to be banned and donating heavily to candidates who also were anti-online gaming.
Yeah, I'm the people that I'm friends with, you know, on Facebook and stuff, the sentiment is that they're not actually, you know, shedding a tear for this.
Yeah.
It's not tragic or anything. The guy was 87. Right. And, you know what I mean? So, but...
It's been sick for a while, too. Exactly.
You know, some people will say that he did well by his employees, and, you know, but then he didn't do well for, you know, players. You know, You never want to hear news like this, people dying, you know. But he was the reason, basically one of the major reasons why online gaming never, ever caught on nationally for regulation. So maybe something will change now.
And if listeners have forgotten, and I doubt many of them have, there were a lot of players who boycotted Venetian.
That's right.
Would not play in the deep stack tournaments or any of that stuff because of Sheldon's viewpoints on this. So again, you know, no one likes dancing on graves, so but there are those that you mourn more than others, and that will be the next item on our show.
Right.
I guess we'll see now what happens with who takes over the Las Vegas Sands. You know, if that aggression, anti-online gaming aggression continues, whether they change or do it a complete 180, which would be fantastic, right? And say, hey, you know, the old man was wrong, and we're going to fix that problem going forward. That would be fantastic. But a lot we'll have to figure out here in the coming days, weeks, months.
Yeah.
All right, Howard Tahoe Andrew, a well-respected and longtime player who frequented the Northern California Reno circuits often, has died at age 86. While Andrew was toughest in Omaha, stud in mixed games, he also played in the World Series of Poker main event, Chris, for a record 45 straight years.
Man.
And with his last appearance in 2018, he amassed more than $1.5 million in tournament winnings since 1976, when I was only 4 years old. And his biggest score being $250,000.
Yeah, I posted on Facebook under one of our stories about him that he was in our main event at the 101, too, right? And I think he finished seventh.
Yes, yes. I played with him quite a bit out there. And I have probably more to say on my personal page later on. Maybe I'll share to Antiup's page, too. But, you know, I started thinking about when I heard about this last night and then thinking about it on my walk this morning, too. He was just one of those guys that you look forward to seeing every time you went out to Thunder Valley.
Yeah.
And not just Thunder Valley. You saw him. He played at our events in Atlantis and Reno, and as you mentioned, in the 101 in Petaluma. So he was a fixture out there all the time. And it's interesting that I have such an affection for this guy, because really the only conversation I can remember having with him and I use conversation quotes, was when I barked at him, "Calm down, Tahoe," when he was arguing with an Omaha dealer that was trying to split the multiple side pots into quarters, which, you know, never happens in Omaha except every hand, right? And he was just getting agitated, and so that's the only quote unquote conversation I had with him. And I don't know whether he knew who I was. If he did, it was only because someone mentioned to him. But he was super well loved, and a couple things that I really liked about him. I mean, he really loves the games I love. You know, you get him at Omaha and Sud game and the horse tournament, and he was ruthless. Not that he couldn't play No Limit Hold'em. He did well in that as well too. But he really enjoyed those games, and I'm a big fan of anybody that's trying to keep those dying games going. So one of the other funny stories that I'm going to share, and I went back and looked when it was, and it was 2018 during the Antiup World Championship, and I believe it was a pot limit Omaha 8 tournament. And I knocked him out in fifth place, and Ben Irwin, the director of poker, came over to me and half-jokingly said, "Everybody in the room hates you now, Scott." And I say half-jokingly because he's absolutely correct, because Tahoe is one of those guys that if you didn't win the tournament, you hoped he would win it. So really a long, long career. And, you know, aside from arguing with that dealer the one time, seemed like a super nice guy and well-respected. So, yeah, that was tough to see last night. I texted a couple folks that I knew him, and obviously everybody's very, very, very sad about this one. So,
well, like a typical greenhorn reporter, you buried the lead here. We should have opened the show with that beautiful story instead of Sheldon Adelson dying.
Well, you know, in the balance of the world, you know, the world knows Sheldon Adelson and not so much Tahoe. And here's the thing. I mean, as a, you know, this as a writer, actually, you're probably more of an editor as you keep ripping upon my wonderful prose, because I'm a writer. You like to end with the positive, right? Because that's, people always remember the last thing you write, not the first thing you write.
Yeah, I guess so. Of course, they won't get that far down into your story. People are known to only read the nut graph and then move on. So they're probably tuned out of our show.
I would say that anybody that's still listening to the Antiup PokerCast listens all the way to the end. So.
That's probably true.
You're down to hardcore now.
I was gonna say, or at least at a hand of the week. Then they can shut it off safely, because I know they're not going to learn anything after that.
Oh man, but yeah, it's going to be weird. I mean, I don't know when I'm going to get back out to California to play, but it's just really not going to be the same without Tahoe. And yeah. he was in every one of those events.
Yeah,
his Omaha Stud mixed game horn, I knew he'd be in it, and then he'd also be in the No Limit if it just happened to be the same day or around it. So definitely a character. So for those of you that got to know him and play with him, I'm sure you are mourning as well as we are. So
yeah.
All right, the executive director of the Michigan Gaming Control Board says the state is, quote, very close to a start date for online gaming, with poker expected to go live 4 to 5 days later. Elsewhere, online poker bills have been filed in Kentucky and Indiana.
Wow. I tell you, it's going to get there someday. I know we keep saying we sound like a broken record, but eventually too many states are going to have it. And then they're going to be like, all right, we got to regulate this thing and get some money, because we're going to lose out if we don't. You know, it's going to happen. Just hope it happens in our lifetime.
Yeah, and I don't want to get people too excited here. Obviously, the Michigan news is the most exciting, because we know that's actually going to happen. We just don't know when it's going to happen, but it seems like it is, as he said, quote unquote, very close. So that's going to be great for our friends up in Michigan, particularly because there aren't any poker rooms that I'm aware of open in Michigan, live rooms now. So this is going to be an opportunity for poker players up there to get their fix in. Until the live rooms open up. So, you know, I generally don't put on the show notes when online poker bills are filed, because they're filed all the time in all kinds of states, and, you know, there's a gajillion bills filed in legislatures every year that's the end of it. Once it's filed, right?
Right?
Doesn't even get to a committee, doesn't even get discussed at all, it just gets filed and dies on a shelf somewhere. So, just keep your eye on it if you're in Kentucky and Indiana, and I'm sure other states will have bills as well too filed soon. So just keep your eyes on them, but don't get overly excited when you hear a bill is filed, because that doesn't mean much. Get more excited when you hear it passing the House or the Senate or both, and then the governor signing it. That's ultimately where it gets gets fun. So
didn't you just tell us not to end on a down note?
This show's an ebb and flow, Chris. Ebb and flow. So we're ebbing now, we'll flow later, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the flow. That'll be our next show when we end this one.
Yeah, there we go.
The Flow with Chris and Scott.
All right, there's this week's update on casino and poker room reopenings. Parks Casino in Pennsylvania has reopened its poker room, and not accounting for the recent temporary closings, we now have 212 reopened poker rooms in the United States. And antiupmagazine.com/reopen. If you haven't heard this website, go check it out. But that's where we list verified details on casino and poker room reopenings. And if you have any updates, email us at editor@antiupmagazine.com. And I will mix up the script a little bit just to say I can't tell you how much we appreciate those who are emailing us, because we do our best to check in with all these rooms that we're still waiting to open every week, but it's not always easy to figure out on the website or Facebook or Twitter if they have opened, or Bravo for that matter. So the fact that you guys are out there and you get either emails from the casino saying we're reopening or actually heard it and sharing it with us is immensely important. So thank you to everyone who shared that.
Absolutely. Appreciate it.
And of course, you'll get that weekly e-blast from us with updates that you can subscribe to on the homepage at antiupmagazine.com.
Any updates? Papes, the Anti-Up Fans free online tournament series on PokerStars Play Money site, is available everywhere. Details on how you can join can be found at bit.ly/PAIPS. Games are on the 6th, 16th, and 26th every month and rotate disciplines with a main tournament followed by a second chance event. PokerStars lets you claim 15,000 free chips every 4 hours. Join the Anti-Up Fans group Facebook page and post within the group to get feedback on hands, ask call-to-floor questions, or just discuss anything poker. Check out our 11 vintage Anti-Up logo designs on merchandise at antiupmagazine.com/shop. You can buy t-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, phone and laptop cases, coffee and drink mugs, and more with your choice of Anti-Up Magazine, Anti-Up Pokercast, or Anti-Up Poker Tour logos. And if you have a hand of the week, listener spotlight, or call-to-floor submission, email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com or post an Anti-Up Fans group on Facebook. You know what I wonder? You know, like when you watch a show over and over and over again and you can start to quote the lines and stuff, do you think like the guys who and ladies who listen to our show are at home like saying the Annie updates with me?
Yeah, they're making jokes to their spouses, and their spouses are like, is that something you heard on that stupid podcast you listen to? Exactly. Absolutely. I'm sure that's happening.
They're just doing it. I should pretty much, you know what I'm going to do is I'm just going to stop and hold the microphone out and let the audience finish the Annie updates for me, you know, like they Motley Crue would do.
Like you're Vince Neil.
Exactly. We both said it. I said Motley Crue. You said Vince Neil. That was brilliant. We were both making fun of the same band.
No, I was not making fun of the band. I was making fun of the singer. You were making fun of the band.
Okay. Find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and you're not sure what the proper ruling should have been? Email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. We'll have Hollywood Casino Toledo Director of Poker Elliot Schechter tell you how he would have ruled. It's Paul Garrettson week. He'll show up in the show again later on. He says, about 10 years ago, I was playing a limit hold'em tournament at my local casino. My opponent bet, and I looked over to see he had his arms laying on the table holding his cards. He had a small stack to his left that I could see. It was just more than one bet. I thought that even if I was behind, it was worth about one more bet to see the rest of the board and see what he had. I raised to get his last bet. He then pulled his arms back to reveal he had more chips on the other side of his arms, and he re-raised. I had no idea that he had more chips. I was a very new player at the time, so I had no idea if it was legal or not to have your stack split into two different piles. If I knew he had an extra stack, I would have just called or possibly folded and left myself in a much better position in the tournament. Did I have a case to complain about his chip stacks? Would I have been able to get my bets back? Doubtful. Or at least end the betting and just run out the board? Curious what you guys think. That was his doubtful, by the way, not mine. I mean, I sold it really good there, but that was his doubtful.
Yeah, I believed it. I was like, wow, why is Chris doubting this? All right, so we gave Elliot the week off again. Actually, we've given him months off, so
yeah.
He's going to be well rested when he comes back, because, again, this one was fairly easy, and there are a couple issues here, and jump in if you want as well, too. But one, your chips do need to be visible. Often if you have these guys that have these big arms or they have their arms over their chip stack, what you should be doing is ask them kindly to lift their arms up so you can see their stack. You don't have to be jerk about it. Just say, hey, man, I just want to see your stack. And all decent players, 99%, will lift their arms up and make sure you can see it. And that would have helped in this situation. That being said, TDA strongly recommends that you keep your chip stack together and in countable stacks. So I would imagine if you mentioned this to the dealer or the floor that they would have asked this player to combine those stacks. Now, obviously, this is a problem because you look over and you don't think he has any, and so you acted on that based on that incorrect information, and unfortunately, that is your problem.
Right.
So nothing you can do about it now, but the good thing you can do in the future is just remember the story when you're playing with someone, and if you are, think of it in your mind. If you're like, hey, I'm only going to call this because he only has one bet, and when that goes in your mind, you're going to go, wait a minute, I need to make sure that he only has one bet.
Exactly.
And then ask him, you can ask him directly. I'm like, is that all the chips you have? You have just one bet left, something like that. And if you don't want to be, ask him to lift your arms up or anything like that. But really, just can I see your stack is always a safe way to go. No one should ever get offended by that and would have avoided this problem.
Yeah, we always get lulled into this sort of rhythm and sense of security that everyone's doing the things the way they're supposed to be doing them, and you wouldn't occur to you to think that this guy has chips on either side of him and one arm's covering him. You're looking at him, you look over, you see a stack, you think one more bet, you think, oh, okay, this guy's out. And then, oh, no. And, he wasn't playing properly. He obviously broke the rule there. But that's the thing. That's the problem with poker is you always have to be mentally sharp no matter what. And it's hard to do it. It's hard to... And even when you're driving a car or something, your subconscious takes over and you're not really thinking about check rear view mirror, check the other rear view mirror. Is that guy going to swerve over in this line? And you just drive instinctually. You know what I mean? You just drive. Same with playing a tournament. You start to get into a rhythm and you start thinking, oh, that guy only has one stack left. I can put them all in here because that's all you're seeing and you're thinking it's being a normal dude. And then it doesn't happen. So mentally, you need to just stay sharp at all times when you're playing. This was 10 years ago, so I'm sure that this is something that was just under his skin for a while, and now he's got it out. But, moving forward, if he gets into – of course, finding a limit tournament these days is not easy.
And I edited it down because I know Chris likes me to be an editor with these things. So, but he did say – he did make a joke about the fact that it was a limit hold'em tournament.
Yeah.
So. But darn it, Paul, now you make me want to play a limit hold'em tournament.
So we get to complete O'Malley's move today. That's correct, right?
That is correct, yeah.
All right, I'm looking forward to it. So here comes part one, and we'll see you on the other side.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week we are playing $2, $5, No Limit Hold'em at our regular home game. This is a pretty good game with a lot of players who know the game well. We bought in for $500 and currently have $870, up $370. The game is eight-handed. The blinds post, the under the gun, and MP fold, and we're in an MP with the 7 of spades, 7 of diamonds. We raise it to the table standard $25. The hijack and cutoff both fold, but the button calls. The button is a fairly sophisticated player. He tends to play his opponents more than the cards and sometimes gets himself into tight spots because of this. He bought in for $500 and started the hand with $450. The pot is at roughly $50 and the flop is the ace of hearts, king of clubs, seven of hearts. This is a great flop for our hand and we're hoping our opponent has some kind of ace. We make it $40 to go. The button calls. The pot is now at $130 and the turn is the ten of hearts. This isn't a great card, but it is one that I think we should continue betting at. We still have a set, and if we get it in here and are behind, our full house outs are probably live. We make it $75 to go. The button slows down a bit, thinks for a while, and then calls. There's now $280 in the pot, and the river is the jack of hearts. Atrocious. I don't think there's anything we can do but check. Our opponent thinks briefly before shoving for his remaining $310. So, our set has become much less valuable. What's the move?
All right, this was really a power position play for me. The board just kept getting worse for us, and with our check on the river, it opens it up to our opponent to put us to a test with a wide range of hands, including any heart and any queen, which have us beat. I will usually take a look at the size of the bet, but here our opponent has to shove with a made hand or a bluff, so that's no help. O'Malley just says he likes to play the player, and this is certainly an example of doing that, but I think it's just too plausible for him to have one of the many cards that sinks us, so I'm folding.
I'm going to go out on a limb here and say this is a bluff. While I likely would have folded had this been me, it's Mal's money, so I'm going to call.
It's so much easier to call it his money.
Yeah, it's easier to call someone else's money. See, then it gets all back to that whole, you know, someone staking you, do you feel more pressure? No, man, it's your money. I'm going to call. But we were told he was a sophisticated player, and you know, once we showed that weakness, he pounced. So if he had a flush or a straight, wouldn't he want to get paid off rather than risk the intimidation and get rewarded with a fold? I mean, I don't know. I'll call, and if nothing else, to flip a coin with Scott's decision. That's always a good thing to do. So one of us will be right at least, so I'm going to call. Here we go. Here comes part two.
Hello again. I guess this might be one of those why so much moments. I guess my set could be good against like an ace-jack or ace-10 with no heart, but there's just so much that we're beat by that our opponent could hold. I don't want to go throwing good money after bad. We think for quite a while and then painstakingly flip our cards into the muck. Our opponent grins and tables the ace of diamonds, jack of diamonds. Well played. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying, sometimes you get bluffed and it hurts. Just gotta move on. I hope to see you on the felt.
All right, again, I'll repeat. This clearly illustrates how powerful position is and how important it is to avoid as much as possible playing out of position and playing effectively when in position.
Yeah, not a bluff exactly. He had aces up, right? I mean, it wasn't really a bluff. He just thought his hand was better than our hand, maybe. Or maybe he thought it's his chance. He has two ways to win, to represent one of those easy straights or flushes, or to actually win with aces up. I don't know, but turns out we would have beat it, and that sucks. Oh, well, what are you going to do?
Yeah, and he certainly had some confidence there because, you know, we checked that. I'm like, so, I mean, you have to think there. If you have the straight or the flush there, you're probably not going to check there, right? So
right.
He probably would have been completely surprised to see us turn over our set had we called, but So you're right. It's not like he's actually playing the player there. He actually had a hand that he thought, based on the action, probably was good. So
right.
But yeah, that's difficult.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting that. I wasn't expecting aces up. I was thinking that he was bluffing altogether, like just had one pair or something. But, I mean, it's a good hand. It's just a hand that you didn't think would bet there. So maybe he was representing.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, again, I mean, you can't stress enough the wide range he could have had there when we checked, right?
Yeah, right.
He could have had one of those cards that had his beat, very likely, but he didn't have to. I mean, I think anybody should have bet what he bet there at that point and taken the well-reasoned chance that you were probably going to win this hand. So it was just an unfortunate board run out for us there.
Yeah, it sucks.
All right, it's time for the AdvancedPokerTraining.com Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast at AntiUpMagazine.com. If you haven't won something from us in the past year, you'll get a free membership to Advanced Poker Training, the world's number one poker training site. And as you mentioned before, Paul Gerritsen has sent us 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 wonderful hands, Chris.
Yay.
It's been a while since I've done the count. So we are going to do what we did with our friend Mr. Huff before and work our way through these five hands. And I will go ahead and jump. I will say this. I have not actually read these hands.
Oh.
They look like they have plenty of details, so I'm assuming they're going to be good, but they may not be. And that's not on Paul. That's on me, because normally I will filter out the hands that are sent to us that I don't think are worthy of the show, but, you know, beggars can't be choosers. So.
All right. Here we go.
All right, so here's hand number one, Chris. It's a 1-1-2 no limit with the extra dollar coming from the button, and he says you have to complete the four or raise to enter the pot. Now, I remember this. Wasn't this like what we played at, like,
Palm Beach? I thought it was it Biloxi? Well, Palm Beach had something like that, too, where the dealer had to pay a blind.
Yeah, I think one of the California rooms had something like that and really confused me because the dollar was on the button, but... But yeah, I really think it was like Luxor that had a 1-1-2, and it got really confusing. But
so confusing.
So not only is the extra dollar on the button here, but as they mentioned, you have to complete the four. So you can't just throw a dollar in and the big blind can't check. They actually have to commit more money. So
yeah.
So keep that in mind as we go through.
Okay.
He says, I've only been at the table for a short while. I'm down to 160 from my $200 buy-in, and it's folded to us in middle position with the ace of diamonds, king of clubs.
Well, already I like Paul because he tells the truth.
He's down, right?
He's down, which is we're always down when we're playing cards. He could have said he was up to 160 from the 100 buy-in, but instead he told the truth and said he's down 40, so I'm already going to love this hand. Well, it's tough for me to know what the standard at the table is, you know, generally...
Yeah, but that two does change things, right? And complete.
Yeah, so, yeah, that's what I'm saying. So, I mean, the fact that you know somebody has to come in to at least four automatically, whether they're the one or the two, you know, automatically means that there's at least going to be five, six, seven, you know, $8 in the pot already. So, from somebody entering. So, I mean, to me, it's tough. If it's just a 1-2 game, we generally raise to 10, 8 to 10 in a live game.
Yeah.
And if it's a 1-3 game, it's more. So in this case, it's like there's more money out there. It's like a 2-4 game almost, I mean, or whatever, because it's so much money out there. So I don't know. I'd probably make it like 12, 15 to go if I'm raising, and I'm definitely raising.
15, right? Because like a 1-3 game, I'll usually do 15, and this is, you know, in terms of blind money, it's the same as a 1-3, but it's a little different. So. Almost probably 18 is probably more mathematically the correct one, probably, but that's an odd bet. So I think 15 is probably what.
Yeah, I like 15. I like 15.
All right. Our hero says he raises to $8, which had been the table standards. All right. Oh. So this game already is way weird to me.
Yeah, it's small.
Not only do you have the extra dollar on the button, not only do you have to complete the four, but the raises that are standard are almost like a limit game. So I wonder if the rest of it's going to play the limit like. Now, I don't mean in terms of structure. But anything in terms of, you know, when you take a bunch of limit players and you put them at a no limit table and it's like watching a baby deer,
trying
to walk, right?
Yeah.
And I've been that baby deer, so I'm not making fun of those folks. But so I wonder if bet sizing is going to be much lower than we would expect for a game like this.
I mean, essentially, it's not a min raise because I understand the way raising goes because somebody can go to six. But it just seems like when you know the only way you can enter this pot is with $4. You know what I mean? It's like, to make it eight, seems like it's a min raise, so I'll just be careful with that. It doesn't seem like it's big enough to get people out if you want to have a narrow field.
But then again, if that's the table standard, that's what you probably should be doing. Nice. I mean, always make your own standard, but as long as your standard is standard for you.
That's it's right.
All right. He says, the villain in the hijack with the $450 calls, as does the button and the small blind. And he says, I don't know much about the villain, but he seems like he seems solid and has been active. He showed down a couple good hands, but has also won without showing. After the rake, the pot is $30, and the flop is the king of hearts, six of hearts, deuce of clubs. I'm sorry. Oh, back up. King of hearts, six of clubs, deuce of clubs. Two clubs, not two hearts.
Okay. Well, this is a good flop for us.
And a small blind checks to us, so it's on us now.
This is a good flop for us. I mean, we have top. We have a king of clubs for backdoor clubs for the second nut flush. It's kind of wet. I mean, I mean, people could play small cards, especially if it's only min raised to eight or whatever you want to call it. And he said the villain's in the hijack, so you know he'd already gotten, you know, he already sees that it's eight to call, and he knows there's 1-1-2 behind him, so he could be playing anything. I like this flop for us. So if the pot's about 30, I'll probably bet 35. I'm sorry, 25, 20 to 25, something like that.
Yeah, I thought you were overbetting the pot.
No, I'm maybe 20 or so. Cause I like 2/3 of the pot when somewhere around 2/3 of a flop, and then maybe half, and then maybe a quarter or a third of the pot at the end. So I like about a 2/3 pot. So maybe $20.
Yeah, I could go all the way up to the pot here. I mean, again, as you mentioned, the board is a little bit vulnerable, but not terribly. And, you know, we have top, and we have some, you know, backdoor opportunity here as well, too. One of the reasons I think I probably would skew more towards a pot size bet here is something you mentioned, in that they not only are clubs possibility, but small cards, too. Because I'm going to guess, again, I'm just making assumptions based on what we know here, but this 1-1-2 structure. We have to complete the four. Table standard raises are eight. I'm going to assume you're going to get a little bit more junk in this game than you would in a normal 1-2 or 1-3 game, right?
Yeah.
So I think it's not that I'm going to sit there and be panicked over a tray four or something like that, but I'm just going to keep my spidey senses up that that's a possibility. So at this point, I would rather make anybody splash around in my pot here with those crappy cards have to pay to beat me. So
yeah.
All right, let's see. We bet $15, which is half the pot, and I'm going to say that's probably the minimum I would bet there, but it's fine. But a little bit more would help, so.
Yeah.
All right, the hijack raises to 40, and the button and small blind fold is back to us.
Well, I'm going to think about what you said earlier, wondering if this plays like a limit game, because that's not a huge raise. I mean, it's a good raise. It's not a huge raise, but then you're thinking, is this guy trying to get a free card and he's drawn, which is what they would do in a limit game, you know? But I think at this point, I'd welcome that. If the guy had a set or had us beat, I mean, I guess he could be protecting against clubs and straights if that's why he's wanting to do this. It feels like he doesn't believe us, or maybe he's on a draw and hoping to get a free card. So either way, we should punish that, because if he doesn't believe us, we have a better hand. Let's hope he has king queen.
Yes.
And if he is drawing, we want to make him pay our price, not his price. So, you know, because a lot of people will do that. They'll make a calculated raise here to save money on the next two streets in case their draw doesn't come in. So, I feel like I'm happy with top and a backdoor club draw. So, I might just. What do I have? Oh, it's 160. So we put in 15 plus the 8, so it's 23. So I might even shove. I might, because to make it 120 now.
Yeah, what else are you going to bet at this point?
Right.
You're in a weird spot with your stack. A shove seems like too much, but anything less than that is awkward. Now, again, you made a really, really good point, Chris, about the how this game could be playing like limit, right?
Yeah.
So if that's the case, a shove might seem weird at that point, you know, where we could raise this to 80 and it not be right in terms of a no limit, but proper for how this game is playing. That makes sense?
Yeah.
But yeah, I'd be tempted to shove here, because all the things you said, I think, are exactly what I'm thinking. One, either he's trying to find out whether we have something. Two, he's on a draw and he wants that free card. And both of those things are things that I don't want him to control, right?
Yeah.
So, a raise is definitely in order. It's just a matter of how much here, but all the way up to the stack is fine with me. So.
Yeah, because let's think about the hands that beat us. King 6, King deuce. I don't believe those are out there. So let's think about King King. Very, very tough. 6-6? Okay, but if you hit a set, why would you raise us? Why not just let us keep betting into you and at least, you know what I mean, take another streak because of the two clubs and two straight cards? Well, I mean, you do have the blind behind you, but I feel like, you know, the blind's probably only called because he already had two in. But to me, I feel like if I had a set here, I wouldn't be wanting to force this guy out. I think I'd want to let it go another street. I guess because there's two more people behind us, he's might be hoping to narrow the path to one person maybe, but I don't know. If I hit a set of sixes or a set of deuces there, I think I'm calling and letting some other people call and then going one more street. And then if it doesn't get there, maybe the board will pair too. So I just feel like this raise here means a draw or he doesn't believe us. So either way, I'm raising if it gets folded to us.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think we're really good here. So
yeah.
Find out what happens here. So, all right, our hero says two pairs unlikely. He could have trips, but why raise? Which your point is too. And really, you know, sixes are really the only thing I think we'd really worry about. But again, you both said why raise, and that's a very good point. So
the button and the small blind folded. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Then he goes on to say he wouldn't want to scare me off if I was c-betting with nothing. It feels like he must be on a draw. I push all in for my remaining 135. So there we go.
All right, wow.
Weren't sure whether that was going to be a move that was acceptable in this game. But
I agree.
The villain instant calls. I show my ace king. He turns over the tray of clubs, four of clubs. Wow.
Oh, man.
You know, it's funny. I'm like, again, I was honest at the beginning. I had not read this hand, so I had nothing to... prejudice me towards this thing, but But you nailed it, buddy. You're talking about those small cards.
Wow.
And I'm like, yep, I think I can see that happening in this style game. And I didn't think they were going to be this powerful small cards.
Wow, but yeah, it's like I think we're a dog now for a moment. It's close.
I think so, right?
It's close.
Like, any club, any five, right?
Yeah, any ace. The thing, too, is that if they were higher, I think we would definitely be a dog. I can't remember the math on this, but it feels like we're definitely a flip, but I think we might be actually trailing a little bit right here.
Wow. All right, the turn and river are blanks, and we win the $340 pot. So,
yay.
Guy, right? So, he says, I won, which is great, but I did play it the right way. Should I bet more pre-flop or on the flop? Should I have just called his flop raise and then pushed? Was shoving the right move? I don't know if I have much criticism here other than the initial raise being a little smaller than I thought. But again, since at the table standard, it's really hard to really criticize, although that doesn't mean you got to reduce your standard.
Don't succumb to peer pressure.
Yes, exactly.
Just because they're all making it 8 doesn't mean it needs to be made 8. If you're going to make them unhappy, good. You want them to be out of their comfort zone. You want them to be miserable. If the raise, the right raise, is more than 8, then make the right raise. That's the only thing I would say. I mean, look at it this way. If you did do anything differently other than that $8 raise, first of all, if you made it more than 8, he might not have played the hand, and you wouldn't have won. If you had just called on the turn, he might have gotten scared, or he might only have one street left. So then if you shove, you don't get any more money out of him because then he folds with only one street to go and he doesn't get to the straight or the club. So the only way you would have gotten all that money is the way you played it. So I'm not going to fault you for any of the things you did. I mean, he said she just called a raise and then pushed. To me, I mean, again, you're just scaring him away after that and you're making $25 more rather than your whole stack doubling through him. So to me, I think you made and we all agree that the shove was the right. You and I both were on the shove, so yeah, we did exactly absolutely. What he said. So I agree with him the whole way through. And just other than that $8 standard crap,
I want to go back to that a little bit because you made another good point. You made a lot of good points this year.
That's weird.
I'm just going to have to retire.
It's a new day. It's a new day.
So, but no, so I mean, obviously we don't believe that $8 is the proper table standard, right?
Mm-hmm.
So as you mentioned, you make your own standard. Don't be pushed around into betting light when you shouldn't. But the other thing is when you're at a game when the table standard is not standard, or what we would or you should believe by standard, I think there's some ability to manipulate that and take advantage of it, right? So, you know, so I guess what I'd be interested in is we make our normal raise, which we said was 15, 18, something like that,
right.
Our standard, right?
Right.
I'd be interested to watch what that action means. So if you find yourself picking up a lot of lines or a lot of dead money by betting 15 because everybody's like, whoa, what's going on with Richie Rich here? Now you need to widen your opening range a little bit, right? And pick up some of that money, I think.
I agree. And the other thing, too, is that now you're going to change the way they're playing because now these guys were all safe with opening for 8 and then people were safe just calling 8 to try to speculate and stuff like that. Now that you're making 15 or whatever it is you're going to make that standard for yourself, now they're going to be changing their opening ranges as well. They're going to be like probably tightening up if they're uncomfortable. So you can now start to narrow what they're probably calling against you with. You know, I mean,
yeah.
If they're just comfortable saying, oh yeah, you know, like when you sat down at the limit game at Derby Lane back in the day before they had no limit and stuff, you know,
yep.
They would everybody would see the flop for the minimum every single time, and then and that's how you can't win. That's how and so when you get in there and you start raising it up, they get all mad and they start yelling at you because they call you a young whippersnapper and all that. But takes them out of their comfort zone. You take a nice little pot off them, nice little session, and you leave, and then you know you take advantage of those situations. That's what you're supposed to do. I mean, the theory of poker always tells you to do the opposite of what they would want you to do.
Right.
And going at that table and just going along with the flow. See, flow came up against. I'm telling you, that's our new show. I don't know.
Flow feature.
I just that $8 raise to me is just not enough. There's so much money already out there. $4 is already out there. You're literally min. It's like a min raise to anybody who wants to enter the pot. You know, I realize after one, they're still have to call 7. But to me, they're calling 7 to win 12. You know, pre-flop, or not even 6 if you're the big blind or whatever that. And I don't get it. I don't get the money on the button. Why are they doing that? It doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, I will tell you this. I have not read any of these five hands, but I just did a quick scan, and all of them are going to be 1-1-2. So I'm actually going to look really, really – not that I wasn't going to look forward to them anyhow, right? But I'm actually going to look forward to seeing how this game plays over the course of five hands, although he says the last one may not be worthy, but we'll see.
Yeah, but, and don't read ahead. I liked it when you were surprised. It was fun.
But I think you're right. I really want to, I like that we're going to have a little mini case study and how this 1-1-2 game plays.
Cool. So. Well, Paul, thanks for sending these in. Much appreciated. I'm not too happy about extending the show 5 weeks, but hey, got to take what you get, I guess. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@anteupmagazine.com. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@anteupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.